The following is a Super Network production with Super Marcy.
But no! Like, I'll have a frozen Coke, no, the machine's broken.
The terrible Australian Be Jermaine.
And this was meant to be a kid's movie, right?
It contains coarse language.
Because, like, the guy back there in the office, he's...
Mature themes.
He's the BDSM kid, now you can have your own red room.
Potential spoilers.
Spoiler alert.
Listener discretion is advised. Please find us at supermarcy.com and subscribe to us via Patreon at patreon.com/thesupernetwork. Enjoy.
G'day everybody, this is B-Termine, aka The Terrible Aussie, and welcome back to episode 155 of the Super Podcast. And with me as always is my lovely co-host, the one, the only, Super Marcy. Hello Marcy, how are you?
Hello, hello. I'm here, hello.
What's been going on, Marcy?
No, not a lot. Life just keeps on trucking along. Life is boring.
Although I should be saying, top of the morning here, because it's St. Paddy's
Day.
Although I don't have a beer, I have a monster drink, so.
I'm drinking water.
Yes, but we'll get on the beers later.
Yeah, sure.
All the green beers.
Yeah, but, sure. That's totally happening.
Exactly. Because we're always, yes, it is St. Paddy's Day at the time of recording of this episode.
Didn't even realise, to be honest.
Yeah, I know. I didn't realise that until this morning. that's the thing. This past couple of years has been... So much has been going on, like, literally time has no meaning anymore. And holidays and dates just don't have the same impact as they used to because you don't hear, just don't hear about it anymore.
No, not really. I don't even know what year we're in. I don't know what day it is.
I'm pretty sure we're in 1845.
Time has no meaning here.
Exactly. However, we brought someone into this madness who's joining us in this kind of bizarro world that we're living in right now. But he is making a return back after appearing on the previous Super Podcast episode, which was episode 154, which we talked about the first two episodes of WandaVision, and as well as the history of swear words, and that, of course, is Sean Clancy. Hello, Clancy. How are you?
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Doing great. Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me back. It's always a pleasure.
And what's been going on since we last talked to you, Clancy?
Well, you know, as you guys know, I live a day behind you, so I'm living in the past, so it's not quite St. Paddy's Day yet. but damn, I can't wait. But yeah, just dealing with the blizzard that we just had, 27 inches of snow. So, yeah.
Yep.
Or three Ron Jeremy.
Wow. I saw all the pictures, and I just couldn't believe that much snow hit where you are.
Yeah, I know, right? In March?
Yeah.
It's not even winter anymore.
Yeah, we kind of get our snow, Northern Colorado, we usually get it around this time, like March, April. They usually say if you're going to plant anything in Colorado, like flowers, wait till after Mother's Day. Because there's usually a snowstorm right before it.
Crazy.
So, fun fact.
Interesting.
Yeah. But for this episode of the Super Podcast, we figured, like, since the last time the three of us caught up together, we were talking about the very first two episodes of WandaVision, which, of course, was the latest MCU TV show.
And boy, were we wrong about everything.
Indeed. So we thought we'd come back together and do a roundup of the rest of the episodes, because there was about 9 episodes. I thought there was 8, but apparently there was 9. And then what had happened since those first two episodes? And
you can say that
so
again.
We'll have a lot to discuss. Exactly. So, Marcy, tell us about your thoughts from, I guess, since we already know our opinions on the first two episodes. What did you think of where the show went from episode three right up to the season, the series finale?
Well, I would say, I guess in general terms, I think the show went in the direction I was expecting it to in some ways. Like, what I thought was actually happening was what was happening. I didn't really expect that the show as a whole is, like, going through all the stages of grief. And that really threw me off. And it was a really interesting kind of character study on Wanda, as well as giving us more backstory. But the fact that it did this without, like, being so insanely obvious about it was really interesting and intriguing. Now, I know that a lot of people were disappointed that the show did not have massive, insane, like, cameos or reveals or whatever. I mean, it did, but we sort of already had guessed what the sort of big bad was going to be, and that was Agnes turned out to be Agatha Harkness, a witch, and we saw that coming. That was pretty much the big reveal. There was no one kind of, like, controlling Wanda besides, obviously, Agatha in her own little manipulative ways. And we didn't see some, like, multiverse thing happen yet. But I think kind of what we see here, I guess that opens it up for that. And I'm just kind of rambling with my thoughts on it, because it's, what, finished a couple of weeks ago. But, yeah, overall, like, I really enjoyed it. And at the end of the day, I don't think it needed, like, all these weird speculative things everyone was discussing. I think it worked as what it was, and it was telling Wanda's story in a very different and unique way that we get to know this character who we've not really gotten to know as well as some other characters, because obviously she hasn't had her own, like, movie and da-da-da. So it was good to actually get to know this character, which is through her grieving process over her brother and her lover. Who else wants to chime in? Because I feel like I'm rambling and I sound stupid. I don't know.
Clancy, tell us your thoughts on overall on WandaVision. How did the show sort of like turn out for you in the end compared to the first two episodes we talked about?
Well, I mean, to Marcy's point where, you know, it wasn't a movie, in a way, it's like, it almost felt like a movie. Like, if it's condensed and all that, you know, it's almost like Wanda did get her own movie. And it, you know, just like how it just transitioned, and then there was the big reveal, you know, with her finally donning the Scarlet Witch, you know, kind of absorbing that. And I thought that was awesome. But it just kind of shows you how powerful she is, to where she can literally, like, brainwash an entire town.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and then I think it was in the last episode where Harkness was saying that Scarlet Witch can't even defeat the Sorcerer Supreme, so there was...
There was a nod Doctor Strange with
Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
Because she's supposed to have a huge role in the next Doctor Strange, from what I understand, right?
Oh, yeah. Like, she's meant to be, like, one of the, I guess, the second main character, I think, of Doctor Strange 2.
Yeah. Yeah, but I like how it built up to that and kind of really just showed how powerful she really is and how she just kind of, more or less, kind of grew into her powers. You know, just accepting more, because I guarantee if there was no bridge between, you'd be like, wait, you know, now Scarlet Witch is, you know, wearing the red headdress and all that. She can control people's minds again and can, like, just create false realities. Like, there would have been no bridge between that. I think we all would have been lost.
100%.
Overall, what's that?
I said 100% right.
Yeah. And I'm kind of intrigued to where they're doing the whole Vision angle. Like, is there going to be something else that's going to happen later on? You know, it was very... They kind of confused me a little bit, if I'm not going to lie.
Well, they had two visions, and
right. One
was obviously could just exist in the Hex. The other one was what they pieced back together, who then got the memories of Vision, but then he just, like, flew away. So I'm assuming he's going to come back in some capacity as the, I guess, alternate rebuilt Vision.
Yeah, and I was like, wait, what happened? He's just gone? So that's the part that I just kind of lost me, but yeah, I would be real, real intrigued and stoked to see Vision back in action again.
Oh, definitely. I guess for me, personally, I really love the series overall. Like, I guess like everyone, I guess we all did, we all got caught up in the whole mystery of it. Like, we're seeing all the clues and hints and like, where is the story going to go? Is Mephisto behind all of this? Or is it a different character and whatnot? But no Mephisto. And also when Evan Peters rocked up as Pietro, which was kind of like, when that happened, I was like, whoa, man. Like, they're finally doing, like, the multiverse thing. Because we knew it was coming because, I mean, we know that with Doctor Strange, the second one, that's going to be dealing with the multiverse, hence why the subtitle that is The Multiverse of Madness. And of course, there's been hints of Spider-Man No Way Home might be also dealing with a multiverse as well, since there have been rumors of certain actors from previous Spider-Man films who might be coming back for that. Because we already know it's like Alfred Molina and Jamie Foxx are confirmed to come back as their respective characters from the different Spider-Man franchises that they're in. So I'm thinking, oh, they're going to start this off here, but then you find out it's like, nope, Evan Peters is some random dude in the town.
Called Ralph Boner?
Yes.
And is that the Ralph that Agnes was always talking about?
Yeah, you know what? You're probably right. Right. That never even occurred to me, because I watched... Because Honest Trailers put up their trailer for WandaVision today.
Okay.
And they were talking about Ralph, and she was like, when she's talking about Ralph, and I'm like thinking, like, yeah, we never saw her husband Ralph. It's like, now I realize that's, yeah, obviously Evan Peters' character. I completely forgot his character's name was Ralph. So it makes
total sense. There you go.
Although I gotta say, though, between this and Spider-Man, Far From Home, they're really cock-teasing us with the whole multiverse
Far
thing.
From Home, or what's it called?
Far From Home, yeah. Yeah, Far From Home. The second Spider-Man movie, because remember that...
Oh, you mean the second one, okay. I thought you meant third one, and I'm like, that's not the third one.
No, I know, they got too many homes in these subtitles of these Spider-Man movies.
No, but they did kind of tease a multiverse with introducing Jake Gyllenhaal's character and saying he was from a multiverse.
Yeah, but then we find out that
he just made it up because he's a shithead.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like this is like the second time this has happened. It's like, you keep cock-teasing us in Marvel with this shit. Well, at the same time, though, I guess in a way that it's their way of like, okay, we're not going to show it yet, but we're putting the seeds of it happening. Like, which I'm
They're
very
planting
about.
That idea.
Yeah. But also what I think is great about the series is, like I disliked how so inventive and creative it is, and it's so different from anything else which we have seen before from all the other MCU films. Mm. And being that it's a TV show, we get to spend a lot more time with Wanda and Vision as characters. Because I think I read the other day somewhere, like, Wanda's whole time, like, screen time and so far in the franchise up to this point in the series was like maybe 30 minutes or something like that. And I like that the series goes, kind of dives into their relationship and explores them more as characters. So now And especially in one episode where we go into the backstory of Wanda and all the tragedy that she has suffered throughout her life. And it kind of, those things kind of recontextualize everything that we already know about those scenes, like what happened to her, what we have heard of in the past, and knowing that that she was from her childhood, it was like her family used to watch a lot of these kind of old TV shows.
And that's pretty much what I said as very early on.
You did. And also, like, you know, introducing brand new characters and bringing back ones who we've seen, like, you know, like Darcy and also Agent Wu, and kind of giving them more screen time and developing them as characters. But I think at the end of the day, what, like you guys have already said, that what makes WandaVision great is that it is an exploration on grief. And it is, when you watch the whole series, it literally is the five stages of grief. Because you've got the first couple of episodes, which is basically denial. Then, of course, you go through the other stages like bargaining, then anger, and then, of course, finally acceptance. And, like, Elizabeth Olsen and Paul Bettany are just, were just fantastic throughout the rest of the series, and particularly Elizabeth Olsen, because she really kind of nails the sort of the trauma and the grief that her character has been going through and finally getting to that acceptance. And, of course, you know, when she fully became Scarlet Witch, she was just looked amazing, and the costume was amazing. And also, Catherine Hahn was, like, I always suspected that she was going to be either the main villain or maybe a secondary villain, but she just played that character of Agatha just so brilliantly well, and she was just fantastic. But I think when we were saying, like, well, who's the really big main baddie of this whole series, and I think the big main bad of the whole series is grief. That is was the true villain of this entire series, and I think the series did such a great job exploring that. And, of course, you know, setting the scenes of, like, it works as a great standalone piece while also giving us hints of what's going to come, like, again, with Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness and whatnot. But I loved how WandaVision turned out, and I can't wait to see more of the MCU shows. And we don't have that far to go, because at the time of this recording, we're only like a few days away from the very first episode of The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. So I'm excited for that too.
Don't you mean The Falcon and the Winter Snowman, Bede?
Yes, The Falcon and the Winter Snowman, which is, for anyone who doesn't know, Marcy and I were randomly talking one night, and then I think I actually just blurted out Winter Snowman rather than Winter Soldier, and it's just been an ongoing in-joke ever since. And then, of course,
now I can't get it out of my head.
Yes. And then somebody, like, drew a meme or something after when Marcy tweeted about it on Twitter or something like that, which was amazing. But yeah, I mean, I think overall, like, I think Marvel, the MCU really knocked it out of the park with WandaVision, and I'm excited to see where they go to next. And it's also great that there are, you know, not just kind of doing the same old thing, they're like doing something different and taking chances on creating something interesting, because, like, I can understand some people, like, who have never seen a Marvel any of the Marvel shows or movies, like, watching this and then, like, being slightly confused about what's going on. Like, why is this being, like, a TV sitcom in the 50s? But I think if you stick with it, it becomes more of a rewarding experience after that. Although I wanted to see Mephisto, damn it.
He was the rabbit.
I think everyone was looking forward to that. But no, never happened.
He was a rabbit for some reason.
Yes. But they did, but that's the thing, it's like all the sort of, like, I just realized, like, watching this whole series, we became basically conspiracy theorists throughout this whole thing. Like, every little thing is Mephisto. Is that Mephisto? Is that person Mephisto? Is the rabbit?
But there were so many hints and clues, and I think they were just being complete and utter cunts knowing this would happen.
Exactly.
About halfway through, I felt like I was watching an episode of Lost.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you immediately go onto, you know, Reddit or, you know, whatever, you know, site just to, like, look up spoilers, go to Nerdist, and there's, like, all this shit that people manage to find in within 30 minutes of, like, the first episode showing. Just like, how the fuck did you see all this stuff?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you're right. Like, there were just so many just kind of hints here and there, just kind of little throw-ins. So I really liked how they just kind of kept that going, a little Easter egg and shit.
Yeah, it was very interesting. And I like that the show also sort of has the, I guess it shows the two different ways that people were dealing with grief, because you've got, obviously, Wanda, but then you have Monica Rambeau, who gets blipped back after the snap or whatever, and she wakes up to find her mum, Maria, has died, and she's, you know, she's lost 5 years in the blink of an eye without knowing it. So this kind of shows us more like what happened after that, but also her grief that she never even got to say goodbye to her mother. And she's grieving, but she's handling it in a completely different way. And they kind of have that moment at the end where there's like an understanding between those two characters.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, definitely.
I just, you know.
And also, like. Oh, go right ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, no. Oh, that's right.
Sorry, Paisley. Apologies.
Oh, all good. All right, so, yeah, what I was going to say was, you know, since we're talking about how grief is basically the main enemy in the show, everyone's portrayal of it was spot on, you know, and it's like you see Elizabeth Olsen, you know, I can't applaud her enough. Like, she just went from happy to mad to happy to sad to crying to happy. I mean, just all the emotions. I mean, her range was just, she knocked it out of the park.
100%.
Yeah, same with Catherine Hahn and, you know, pretty much everybody. But, yeah, those two just really stood out for me.
Oh, yeah. And it is like, and it also, again, you know, like, I mean, I've always liked Vision and Wanda throughout the MCU films, but I think you kind of, having this time to sort of develop them more as characters, I sort of have grown to love them even more. And I think even a lot of people, even people who are just casual fans of these characters, are now full-blown fans of them because, you know, this series took the time to develop them and made them stronger characters.
Mm.
For real. Yeah, well, the same thing happened with Chris Pratt, you know, before he signed on for, or when he signed on to Guardians of the Galaxy. You know, he infamously came out and said, like, I didn't think this was going to go anywhere. And now they're literally some of the most popular characters, well, definitely in the MCU because everyone loves Chris Pratt, but, you know, now you got Groot, you know, just like at that whole spectrum, you know, just went from no one to now everyone loves the shit out of him.
Oh, so. Yeah, we got, and that's what I'm excited for with Phase 4 because they're going to be introducing, both on the film and TV side, new characters that, you know, audiences have never even heard of before, you know, like Shang-Chi or the Eternals or Moon Knight and all that, who are characters that, you know, most mainstream people have never heard of, but you'll know for a fact that once these characters are unleashed, they're going to be huge fan favorites. Mm. I mean, who would have thought, like, years ago, like you're saying, Clancy, that, like, a group of comic book characters who are people who are so obscure, where literally two team members are a talking tree and a talking raccoon, would be like one of the big, most popular characters in the past couple of years.
Mm.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Very true. Very true.
Everyone's had their fill of Wolverine. Let's let some other people kind of take the spotlight for a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But I'm excited for where Phase 4 is going and where the future goes from here.
Yeah, I mean, like, the next, I guess, movie will be Black Widow, and then the end of the year we get Spider-Man.
Well, I think Shang-Chi comes out, and Eternals comes out this year as well.
But are they movies or shows?
Movies.
Oh, okay.
And then I can't remember,
but I'm just talking about, like, theatrical movies.
Yeah, and then if you look from the TV side, I think, well, Loki's coming out in June or July, and I think Hawkeye and Miss Marvel may be coming out sometime later in the year after that.
I can't wait for Loki. That's going to be, it's going to be like WandaVision, where it's just going to be just one giant mind fuck.
Mm. Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm so excited for it as well.
Yeah.
But, yeah, but before we move right along to our next topic, guys, any final words on WandaVision?
It was awesome. Stop complaining. That's it.
Exactly.
That's all I have to say.
Agree. Shut up, people. It's amazing.
That's the thing, though. Like, I can understand people being upset. It's like, oh, all my theories that happened, but then I'll be like, well, go rewatch it again. Now that you know where the story goes, then you'll have a new appreciation for it for what it is rather than what you think it was going to be.
Well, and it's not a straightforward, like, action show. Like, there's character development, there's story involved. Like, it's not just, you know, an introduction to a character. I mean, we already know about the character, but it's nice to dive further into that character, which is why I love it.
Exactly. Yeah, and I like to see more of that with the shows, because that way you can focus on secondary characters and kind of develop them, which I'm excited about. So, but we'll move right along to our next subject. We have a lot of topics we're going to talk about on this show, but we thought we might have a bit of a brief discussion on the most recent special of the TV show South Park, which of course was the South Park vaccination special, which of course is a sequel to the pandemic special, I believe. Did that come out earlier this year or last year? I can't remember.
It was last year.
Last year. Yeah. So that just recently premiered only a few days ago, and of course, you know, that... And we're on video at the moment, and since our audience can't see this, Clancy has put on his face mask, which of course is of Randy Marsh. Or at least his mustache and mouth.
Yeah.
Gotta stay protected.
Exactly. No having sex with pangolins, please.
Shit. Can we cut that out?
Hell no.
This is all staying at the podcast. But, Marcy, what did you... Marcy, tell us your thoughts on the South Park pandemic. I mean, not the pandemic special.
The vaccination special.
Vaccination special.
Yeah, so obviously, like, I'm a lifelong South Park fan. I was watching South Park before it ever premiered in Australia. I'm that special and lucky. So, yeah, I'm a long time fan of the show. So, of course, I'm going to watch anything they do, and I think I'm in sort of a minority where I think South Park really only has like a handful of just not very good episodes. I think just about everything they've done is fairly watchable in some way. So, I was very much looking forward to it because I knew they would just take the absolute piss out of everything that's happened in the last few months. And I was not disappointed, but what I actually really liked was this felt more, I guess, in a way, almost a bit more old school South Park, where it does focus heavily on the boys, but it does sort of have focus on other things. But I like that it's like this central story about them and their friendship, all the while taking the piss out of like absolutely everything. But I think it kind of left behind a lot of the more newer stuff, which was like more of a Randy Marsh show or other shenanigans. So I like that it was just more back to basics. And I think by the end of this episode, I think that's a good indication that they are going to maybe go back to what they used to do, which was more of a standalone-ish type style. But I like both because I think it works for the times, but I would definitely be curious to see what they do and where they go. But I just thought this was really funny. All the jokes of me pretty much hit on point, and I found it more enjoyable and less cringy than the pandemic special, because that was so fucking gross and just stupid. Oh my god. It was more hard to sit through because of that. I didn't need to see Randy Marsh fucking a bat and a pangolin or making everyone drink his jizz. But I digress, okay? This one just wasn't like that, and I appreciated it, okay? And no one grew mustaches after drinking his jizz, except Clancy, because he got it on a mask.
Clancy, how do you react to all that?
Should I put the mask back on?
And also your thoughts on the episode as well.
Yeah, you know, I just put it on at work, you know, before I open. You know, just plug in the HBO Max and watch it there. But, to Marcy's point, yeah, it's definitely more ingrained with the kids. You know, definitely a story, more of them, more or less going on a quest, I guess. Mm. You know, back like they used to. The one thing that did kind of throw me off is we've seen Cartman just be so fucking evil.
Mm.
And in this one, he was almost like the good guy, if you will.
Mm.
Like, in a way, it was like he was like the savior. It's like, this isn't the Cartman I know. I know. Maybe the vaccine's messing him up, so. But, overall, I enjoyed it. I did, however, like the pandemic special a little more. Like, it just went right for it.
Because it was just, like, fucking was disgusting.
Exactly. I laugh every time Randy comes out of his little jerk-off hut when he's dropping off the bags. He's like, oh, it'll be another 5 minutes. I mean, come on, you can't not laugh at that.
That is funny, but it's just so... God. How stupid.
It's so fucked, but it's... But with the vaccination special, you know, it hit all the marks. It, you know, did what it did with the political, you know, shit that happened in our country, you know, with all those maniacs. So, you know, I'm glad they had enough ammo to put out a worthy special. You know, and I kind of like that they're basically compiling just the entire fucking world crumbling into, you know, instead of like a week, like they have a couple months worth of ammunition to work with. So I like how they touch on a lot of major subjects that not a lot of people will forget about. So I did enjoy that there was a lot in it, but it didn't overwhelm the story.
I'm glad they gave the middle finger repeatedly to QAnon, because seriously, fuck off.
Yes. Yes. Definitely. Big time.
I guess for me, I really enjoyed this special. I think I liked the pandemic special a little bit more, mainly because of how fucked up it was. And I remember watching it over at your place, Marcy, with you and your fiance Graham, and you were telling me beforehand, I was like, oh, babe, this is really fucked up. I'm like, okay, I'll see about that. And it was fucked up. Rubber was hilarious. And this one, I did think it's quite as hilarious as that one, but there were a lot of things about this episode, or special, I should say, that I really liked. I like the fact that, like you said, Marcy, it is kind of back to basics, being more going back to the kids themselves, which I think is, for me, the strongest episodes of South Park when they do focus on the kids. I'll say episodes that are about Randy or other characters aren't great as well, but I think the best ones are about them, the kids, being kids, because that's always kind of fun. And sort of watching them and how basically, like, they feel like they're growing apart as friends, so they want to fix their bro relationship, I think.
And for some reason, Kenny is like the baby of the group somehow.
Because he's the one who's being affected, like that they're falling apart as friends. And so they have to do all this for Kenny. And then, you know, and of course Mr. Garrison comes back and he thinks like, oh, hunky dory, everything's going to be fine, but everyone in town fucking hates him. And then I really enjoyed, like, this is the thing I loved about this episode, this special, was, of course, it takes the absolute piss out of QAnon believers. Like, South Park has always been great when it finds specific targets and takes the piss out of them. Like, sometimes they take a much more even-handed approach. Like, they kind of show both sides of the of the debate. But I think it's pretty clear that Trey Parker and Matt Stone definitely do have a disdain for these people, because the QAnon characters in this episode are complete fucking idiots. And even Mr. Garrison, who they see as like the chosen one, their leader, and even Mr. Garrison, for at least a little while, it's like, you guys are just... One of my favorite things is like What do you say is like, why don't you go shit out your dick hole?
Amazing.
And the cure, I believe, is like, oh, that's a sign. That's gonna like that's to show how complete idiots they are. But I do like the fact that even like when they do talk about the celebrity elites and all that, and they show a board of all the celebrities, you've got Oprah, George Clooney, Hillary Clinton, what that is. Of course, you see a picture of Trey and Matt on there. So
yeah.
I love that.
That was fucking funny.
Yeah, which I thought was really funny. And, yeah, I think it's just a really fun episode. And, of course, the QAnon believers, like, brainwash the kids in town and turn them into their own little group, the cuties.
Yeah, I wonder what that was a reference to.
Yeah, I thought the exact same thing too, Marcy, that movie that was on Netflix, Cuties. Well, it's definitely obviously a homage to that.
Can we just take a moment to just say something?
Okay.
In the recent weeks, right, everyone's whinging about cancel culture. Oh my God, they're cancelling Dr. Seuss. No, they're just not publishing 5 books that most of you probably don't even fucking remember. Because there's racist and shit in there. And even Dr. Seuss acknowledged that. And this is a decision made like a year ago or something. And they're not having Pepe Le Pew, the rapey skunk, in Space Jam 2. Everyone whinging about that. Like, when the fuck was the last time you watched Pepe Le Pew fucking cartoon? Give me a break, okay? Now, you're raving on about this shit, but it's the same people that rave on about cancel culture who wanted the movie Cuties to be cancelled.
Based on a movie poster.
Over a movie poster with out of context pictures and whatnot, where it's a movie that condemns what it's about, but people don't understand.
Right.
So next time you want to whinge about cancel culture, remember what you wanted to get banned last time.
And let's not forget, the same people who cry about cancel culture are the same ones who, about 15-odd years ago, wasn't it that they wanted to cancel France and wanted to rechange from French fries to freedom fries?
Yeah.
And also, didn't they also try to cancel the Dixie Chicks because the Dixie Chicks just said publicly that they were ashamed to be from the same state as George W. Bush? How is that different?
It's not. It's not. The time we're in now, it's about, obviously, we can acknowledge that there's things that have issues. Yeah? Mm-hmm. We can put a disclaimer in front of something to say, this was the views of something then, or not even then, but times have changed, we understand this is offensive, da-da-da. That's all you need. That's all you need. If, you know, the Dr. Seuss company doesn't want to or whatever redraw pictures or not share these stories, if they think that's the appropriate thing to do, just no longer republish them, that's perfectly fine. Things are not just outright just like that, that's completely done. In general, like, that's not the case. There are certain people who we should never see again, and that's fine. Cancel the fuck out of, you know, a murderer, rapist, you know, whatever. That's perfectly fine. But I think people are just not quite understanding what the issues are, because when you're saying, how dare you do this, it's like, okay, so you're okay with really bad racism, are you? That's what you're going on about. And when people were making a big whoop-de-da about what Lola Bunny apparently looks like now, it's like, so you're really doing this because they put clothes on a cartoon rabbit and she doesn't have huge, massive, insane tits now.
Well, that's the thing that I have
like,
found.
Like, fuck off!
Well, that's the thing. That whole situation I found bizarre because Lola Bunny has been appearing in other Looney Tunes stuff since Space Jam. And she's had tons of different redesigns that don't have boobs and stuff like that. It's only, like, I think some of these people have probably never seen the stuff that she's been in since then or probably just remember the first Space Jam movie. and they think like, oh, and it's like, but she's been redesigned a billion zillion times since then. And like, how's this any different? I don't know. Some people like to just complain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, before you know it, well, before you know it, we'll have a director's cut of the first Space Jam where they redesigned Lola Bunny, you know, so that's the new audience. But yeah, I mean, it's just getting ridiculous. I feel like we're not even changing history. We're just like, we're erasing it. So there's going to be, you know, two generations from now, they're going to be like, Aunt Jemima, like, no, it's always been this bottle. And you're like, no, your grandkids screwed that up. So yeah, it's just all this petty bullshit that people are crying about now. It's like, shit's been around for like 100 years at least. Nobody had a problem with it. Not even the heads of the company had problems with it. In fact, they approved the designs, and now people see an issue with it. It's like, COVID is taking out the wrong people, I'm telling you.
Yeah. Like, I can understand if you'd be like, okay, I don't have a problem with this now, but I have a problem with this. Like, sorry, I had a problem with something. I didn't have a problem with something then, but I have a problem with something now. I think in some ways that shows how much, say, you as an individual have grown and understand things. Like, jokes I made 10 years ago, I wouldn't fucking make now. I am ashamed of myself for being that stupid. And I think that's just part of growth and more understanding. Like, not everything is going to be offensive. Some people take it way too far, I think. But I don't really give a shit if you're going to, you know, we have candy called Redskins. I don't care that you fucking change the name, because I think Redskin has been a very offensive term for a long time. Maybe you shouldn't have called it that in the first place, called it something else. Whatever.
Well, I mean, we could tie the Redskins into South Park, you know, their new logo. Fuck you.
Fuck you. And that was a great episode, by the way. Just as an example, and I think people just, these are the same people that whinge about this shit. It's all their racist shit getting cancelled, and it's like, I'm sorry, but who was book burning back in the 60s and whatever? It was these fucking crew.
Yeah.
So I don't think there's anything wrong with just being respectful to things. Like,
yeah. Well, before you know it, they're gonna have to redo the Lucky Charms, you know, character, because it'll probably be offensive to Irish culture. You know, everyone's gonna assume Irish people wear green every day and have red hair, and
they do. I thought that's what all Irish people were like.
But I think
there's a difference between, like, that kind of silly thing, but something else that takes it way too far.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, like the episode of The Simpsons where they come to Australia. Like, they go with every type of Australian stereotype and that thing. And I remember at the time when that came out, I was actually slightly offended because, like, this is not what Australia
is. Yeah, I was actually very pissed off with how they represented Australia. I'm like, excuse me, that's not okay. But now I think it's the best fucking episode because it's hilarious.
Yeah, because I realize, oh, well, it's just taking the piss.
It's just taking the piss. It's not meant to be serious. Like,
yeah, it's not meant to be serious. It's meant to be silly. It's not, like, being mean or anything about it. It's just, like, and they do that to all countries they go to, so the absurdities of all the places. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not, so, yeah, but, like you say, Marcy, I guess cancel culture, there are definitely some issues within cancel culture. Like, I think some things are definitely worth canceling, and other little things, like, think, that's a bit too much of a stretch.
Mm.
But at the same time, though, I think as we as people, you know, it's time, you know, see something, and it's like, oh, you know, that's not accepted, we need to move on from that. But at the same time, though, I'm a person who doesn't believe in censorship, so that's why I think you, like, if we have something that definitely has elements that are very problematic, put a disclaimer on it. Say this was something was at the time was acceptable, but we have learned but we have changed as people. So that way it's more of a teaching tool to people who not to be offended when they watch something, because, like, understand that, you know, this was a different time then. So, like, a lot of stuff, particularly, like, from 50-odd years ago, like, we have society is very different from 50 years ago than it is now. So we'll definitely, you know, we've grown since then, and, you know, we want people to realize that, you know, different time, it was a different time then, and we've grown since then and become and better. So there's nothing wrong with that. And
no.
Yeah. And, but,
I just thought, you know,
yeah. Well, there was that whole thing with Mr. and Mrs. Potato Head.
Yeah.
And then did Mattel just go like, yeah, we're not changing it. So
they literally just wanted to call it Potato Head and just have
that's what they I'm like.
It.
Oh no, yeah, because it's ambiguous or whatever. Which
yeah, but,
whatever, you know. But,
yeah,
you can make Mr. Potato Head into Mrs. Potato Head. Like, you know, they're
you could have just a potato head, but I think people
you
just went.
A fucking potato, yeah.
People just went absolutely insane. I'm like, I'm sorry, but what?
I can't wait till they attack Mr. Bucket. You know, where you put your balls in his mouth. Why is it that but I'm under radar with anybody?
There are some things I'm thinking, like, I'm surprised cancel culture hasn't gone after this yet. All people complaining about cancel culture haven't gone after this yet, but I digress. But
yeah.
But anyways, back to South Park.
Well, I think it's very relevant in regards to talking about South Park, because the same people who are whinging, they're cancelling everything. They wanted South Park gone, so fuck off.
Yeah, it's not going anywhere.
These are the same people who wanted to cancel South Park were whinging about things getting cancelled. Middle finger and middle finger. Fuck you.
South Park themselves created a hashtag cancel South Park because they don't fucking care.
They don't. They never have. And that's what makes South Park amazing.
But any final thoughts on the special again? No, it is a vaccination special. Any final thoughts on this episode before we move on to our next topic?
Well, as an elite, I've got to go drink that baby blood and whatever the fuck these morons seem to believe. The more they expose this kind of shit, the more I'll love South Park, pretty much. So I thank them for that. And they are the all-powerful from up above, bringing back Mr. Hat,
exactly.
Who we haven't seen for, like, 20 years. Or so.
Going back to the original South Park.
Yeah. So I find that, you know.
But I did like that Mr. Slave was in the background in one scene, getting the vaccine.
Mr. Slave.
Mr. Slave.
Yeah, he was in there, so was Gay Fish, Kanye.
I was going to say, like, that scene where everyone's, like, excited that they got the vaccine, there's so many cameos of a lot of characters from previous episodes just dancing around all over the place. I thought, that's kind of one of the scenes you literally have to slow down just to see if you get who else you can see.
It was a good little callback. But no, as I said, I really enjoyed it. I think I liked it more than the pandemic special just because it wasn't as fucking disgusting. But yeah, I can't wait to see what they do next. And seriously, I want to be 100 years old and still watching new episodes of South Park.
That would be nice.
But we'll move right along to our next topic. We were sort of talking, discussing about our discussing in our group chat, like what we would like to talk about on this episode. And Clancy, you brought up an interesting topic to discuss, which of course we discuss some of our favorite non-MCU Marvel films. Because there was a time for our listeners out there were Marvel films made not by the MCU.
What?
Yeah. Oh.
They were like movies that were like made from other studios based on Marvel characters. Because like now we know we're in a world where superhero franchises can be a shared universe. But there was a time when all these movies were like their own separate thing, their own standalone thing. And there's quite a lot of great ones, some not so good ones. Like, I mean, the very first Marvel produced movie of all time is a film that we've done an audio commentary for, Marcy, of course, is Howard the Duck.
And I stand by that is a brilliant piece of cinema.
But we thought, let's talk about some of our favourites, or ones we feel are worth talking about. But Marcy, which is a non-MCU Marvel film you would like to discuss?
Howard the Duck.
Of course.
I mean, am I allowed to, even though we've done a whole commentary for it?
We can talk about Howard the Duck again.
We can say that that movie is amazing. It has duck tits in it for some reason, and I still am traumatized by that.
I like the fact the very first Marvel produced film of all time, the first one ever made, has duck tits in it.
Mm. And George Lucas wanted to get this movie made so badly. Out of everything you have with Marvel, he's like, this duck. And then they made it into what they did. These were conscious choices people made.
Indeed.
And I'm glad finally people see the light with how amazing Howard the Duck is.
Well, I mean, it's always had more a cult following. Yeah. But I think it's really in the last few years that cult following has grown a lot more. And I know there are people who are clamoring for a Howard the Duck movie or a TV show.
I want one right now.
We almost had an animated series from Kevin Smith, like that could have came out right now, but once Fox got bought out by Disney, they pretty much cancelled the show. So we would have had a Howard the Duck series right about now.
Cancel culture strikes again.
I know, right?
I guess they just didn't want us to see duck tits in a new incarnation.
No.
But Clancy, what are your thoughts on Howard the Duck? Like, is it? Do you like this movie? Do you hate it? What are your thoughts on it?
You know, I really can't speak to it. I have seen it. I've seen it a couple times, but I was way young and had no idea what the fuck was going on then.
And you wouldn't have any idea what's going on now either.
Yeah, well, you know, it also came right after watching Back to the Future Part 2. So I'm like, what? So I was a little confused there because I was like, wait, why was Marty's mom in this? Sleeping with a duck.
That's Leah Thompson had quite a year. In the span of a year, she was in two movies where one was she wanted to fuck her own son, and then all of a sudden she wanted to fuck a duck.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Her agent probably, he's probably in prison now.
The 80s were a wild time. Although I do like the fact that, I think at the time she was a bit embarrassed by this movie, but she has now kind of embraced it. And she's even actually has tried to talk to Marvel about making another Howard the Duck movie, which I've heard rumors about. And I think she even confirmed this herself. Whether it be in my own little mind, I like to imagine that the Howard the Duck movie is set in the MCU, just like way, way forward. Just like the Angry Hulk movie.
Well, I mean, Howard the Duck was in... which one was it?
It was in the first two Guardian movies, and he also had a very brief cameo in Endgame. He was like in the background of a scene. You had
That's what I was thinking of. But yeah, so... He's already in. He's already canon. He's in the universe.
And if he's not in Guardians 3, we riot.
I agree. Mm-hmm. I agree.
Or at least, or make a spin-off to the Guardian films where it's Howard the Duck, Rocket Raccoon, and Cosmo the Dog.
Done.
Because we need that astronaut dog, damn it.
I know,
yes,
right?
And it will be adorable.
Exactly. It'll be like Homeward Bound 2, but with those three characters and they're trying to get home. But Clancy, what's a non-MCU Marvel film you would like to talk about?
Well, there's kind of two, because one of them is a guilty pleasure of mine.
Yep.
Only because none of the fight scenes were choreographed, and they just told everyone to do whatever the fuck they wanted to do. And it's the Punisher. Dolph Lundgren's Punisher. God, that movie's so just terribly bad. But,
it is.
What did you do that? Wasn't he like an NYPD cop or something like that? Like, he wasn't even Special Forces. Yeah, he was a cop, which then in the Tom Jane one, they made him FBI. And then finally they got it right in the Ray Stevenson one, which kicks ass, by the way. Another guilty pleasure. But yeah, they finally got it right. They're like, oh no, he was like special forces and badass and this and that. So I like that. But yeah, Punisher, guilty pleasure. It's just a feel good popcorn movie, popcorn and whiskey movie. But Blade, the one that basically more or less jump-started the R-rating movies for comics, even though Punisher came out first. But Blade was like the first major release, and I like how they took the character, again, kind of like Guardians of the Galaxy, where you've got mostly unknown characters that not a lot of people know. Mm. You make a movie out of them, and it kicks fucking ass. And they even rewrote the character himself and then added to his partner Whistler, which was, again, like one of the most badass characters. Mm. So my hat's off to them for basically rewriting a character. And in the comics, after the movie came out, the writers of the Blade comics rewrote the character in that vein, where they kept more or less matched up with the powers he had in the movies, which I think that's pretty powerful.
I find it interesting that when Blade first came out, like, it wasn't advertised much as, like, a comic book movie, like, at all. I don't think I even, like, found that out till later, till I actually realized this is, like, based on a comic and character. I actually had, like, no idea at the time. So I found that really, really interesting, because a lot of people would be talking about it, but they didn't actually know that. And I think in some ways, like, once people found out, they probably would have, you know, gone and picked up a comic.
Yeah, because I think their comic sales actually kind of spiked a little bit. So it definitely generated interest, and now that's all people want now in the MCU is another Blade movie.
Mm.
Which is coming, by the way, with...
Which is funny,
Yeah, with Mahershala Ali playing the role. And the funny thing is, though, I find interesting about that, he actually went to Marvel to want to do a Blade movie.
Mm.
Like, he won his second Oscar. He won his second Oscar. He's now won two Oscars, went to Marvel Studios, went to Kevin Feige. It's like, Feige, I want to be Blade, and I want to make a movie right now. And Feige's like, all right. So they added that onto the schedule. I suppose when you win two Oscars within 3 years, you have that power now, so.
Yeah.
But sort of talking about both Punisher and Blade, I think with the Punisher I find interesting, like the Punisher series is, like, weird. He's one of those characters, like, regardless what you think of all the movies and the TV show, you would think he would be the simplest character to get right, but it's always the hardest one to, like, nail down. It's like the similar with the Fantastic Four. Like, it should be so easy, but they can't quite nail it. And I do like, I mean, I'm not going to say that the Dolph Lundgren Punisher is a good movie, but it is watchable. Although I find it interesting, like, how far they go out of the way to kind of change him as a character. But I guess that's sort of why I like, kind of in a way I respect the Marvel films before the MCU, is like, they basically just did their own interpretations of these characters, whether fans like it or not. And the fact, like, you know, the Dolph Lundgren one didn't even have the skull on.
Right, on his, he just wore black, like a, like some Hot Topic shopper.
I mean, exactly. if it wasn't called The Punisher, you wouldn't have any idea it had anything to do with The Punisher.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I also like the fact that the director of this movie, Mark Goldblatt, is an Oscar nominee, because he edited Terminator 2 Judgment Day.
Wow. Yes.
How do you go from Punisher to Terminator 2 and almost winning an Oscar?
Right? Like, he's only directed two or three movies, the other one being Dead Heat with Treat Williams and Joe Piscopo.
Oh my god, yes.
Oh god, yes. That's on Netflix, actually.
Yeah, I think it's also on Shudder as well, at least in the US version of Shudder. But Mark Goldblatt has actually had quite the career, because he's actually first and foremost an editor, and he's edited everything. Like, his filmography, and I'm going to try to find his filmography, so bear with me.
Let's see. Okay.
Do,
almost found it. He edited Terminator 2.
Mm.
He also edited IMDb Saving Forever. He also, he edited, the original Piranha, The Howling, Enter the Ninja, Halloween 2, the first Terminator, so he did that, Rambo First Blood Part 2, Commando, Nightbreed, Predator 2, The Last Boy Scout, Super Mario Brothers, the movie.
Oh, no.
True Lies, and Marcy, you're about to get excited, he edited Showgirls.
Yes!
That's quite the resume right there.
I wish that was my resume. Cool. Fuck.
He also did Starship Troopers, Armageddon, Detroit Rock City, Pearl Harbor, Hollow Man, Bad Boys 2, Exorcist the Beginning, XXX2, X-Men The Last Stand, G-Force, The Wolfman, well, that's an uncredited one, Rise of the Planet of the Apes, Chappie, and the Death Wish remake.
Hmm.
So basically his career just started kind of fucking tanking.
Yeah.
He just needed to make Rent. He's like, I don't give a shit, I'll edit your movie.
Listeners out there, next time you watch Showgirls, you're going to be like, this is edited by the guy who directed the Punisher movie.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems he works with Paul Verhoeven a little bit there.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. He did a lot of his movies. But in terms of Blade, I do love the first Blade movie. I was first introduced to the character on the Spider-Man animated series, because that he made an appearance on there. So I was kind of aware of him as a character before the movie was made. But I think I remember even as a teen when the movie came out, I was like, when it says like Blade, Marvel character, I'm like, isn't he the character from the Spider-Man animated series, the vampire guy? And I thought, okay, this would be cool. And that movie, of course, rocked. And Wesley Snipes was like perfectly cast in that role. Probably too much so, because by the third film, he became a complete utter asshole and was in character the entire time.
He Steven Seagal'd that movie, just had like stand-ins the whole time.
Exactly. But for the two BPs, he was no problem. Mm. But also, it was interesting because, you know, at this point, Blade was like the very first major, well, first successful, critically and commercially led, black-led superhero film. Because at that point, you've had a few that were around at the time, but they kind of all tanked, like, you know, Steel, like the year before with Shaquille O'Neal. Let us not forget that movie.
Meteor Man.
Yeah. Also Spawn as well, which also came out the year before.
Oh, yeah. Michael Jai White's first, like, major movie.
Yep.
Yikes.
And so, I think, like, Black Panther definitely kind of was the next one, like, that perfected that by being this humongous sort of black-led superhero film. But it wouldn't be where it was if it wasn't for Blade kind of opening the doors for that. And I think you're right, Marcy, that I think with Blade, probably one of the reasons why it was so successful is that most people didn't know it was a Marvel comic movie, and people just saw it as an action horror film more than anything else.
Mm.
But it was one that you know, that was hugely successful. It still holds up pretty well. Yeah, some of the special effects are definitely dated, but it's still a lot of fun. Mm. And one where it's like the perfect actor was cast in the perfect role. And it'll be interesting to see how Mahershala Ali kind of tackles the character when they reboot Blade in the next few years.
But Wesley Snipes can come back in the multiverse.
Indeed, yes. I would like Wesley Snipes to come back in as a main character in Black Panther, because before he was in Blade, he actually tried to make a Black Panther movie as well, but it never panned out.
Mm.
So I think it would be cool if they can like sort of bring it full circle, like bring him as maybe a villain in like Black Panther 2, or even bring him as a character in Blade.
Because
that way, since now he's kind of got the resurgence at the moment with both Dolomite Is My Name and Coming to America. So he's definitely on the up and up, but I'd like to see, then bring back Wesley Snipes into the fold in the MCU in some way.
Bede, what about you?
All right, I think with Clancy, I've got two as well.
First one I want to talk about was a Marvel movie that I loved as a kid, but now I recognize it as being a complete turd.
Captain America 1990?
Yes.
Yes, I knew it.
You called it.
I watched the 1990 Captain America movie all the fucking time.
What a loser.
I know, right? That's the thing. I realize, looking back on my childhood, I always liked the worst films in each movie franchise. Like, for example, two of my other favorite movies as a kid was Star Trek V: The Final Frontier.
Ew.
And also Superman IV: The Quest for Peace. Don't ask me why I loved all these three movies as a kid, but I did. Although I do have
four over three.
Well, I agree. Everyone says the four Quest for Peace is the worst Superman movie, but it's really number three. Nobody wants to admit that.
It is true.
But
it's drunk Superman.
Superman 3 isn't even a Superman movie. It's a Richard Pryor movie with Superman as a supporting character.
Yes.
Although I would forgive us drunk Superman, which is like the best part of that whole movie.
It's the only part worth watching.
Red in a shot glass.
Exactly. But, my viewing habits as a kid were weird, and Captain America 1990 was one of them. I guess when you're a kid, you just watch anything and you just automatically think it's awesome. And I remember, I think I've told this story on the podcast many years ago, probably 10 years ago, to be fact. It was like when I was so obsessed with Captain America that I actually went and made a Captain America costume.
What a nerd.
And I took one of my aunties to make a full-fledged costume. Had the little star, like, stitched onto a blue shirt and red and white around there. And also had the, like, a mask with, like, little paper wings attached to its head. I was obsessed with the movie that much that I made that.
And what was your shield bead?
It was a garbage can, Marcy. Which I think is hilarious, because in the first Captain America, the first Avenger, at the end there's a kid pretending to be Captain America, and what does he use as a shield? A garbage can. So nice. He's the character I related to as a... But, I think I rewatched this movie, like, a couple of years ago. I think at some point we need to do a commentary.
It's so dumb!
It is so bad, because most of the time, nothing happens. And there's long stretches of things that don't happen. And, like, I will give it credit. For about most of it is actually pretty faithful to the character, even if it does make slight changes. But then it kind of goes off the rails. Like, for example, like, Red Skull's in it, but you see him as Red Skull for, like, 5 minutes. And then for the rest of the movie, he's got, like, a really bad skin job. And also, like, most of the time, Captain America... when he wants something, like, wants to steal something, he'll pretend to, like, in a car, so he'll be like, oh, quick, pull over, he gets out, and then once the other person's out of the car, he runs the car and just drives away. He does that at least two or three times in that movie. And also the costume.
Oh, yeah.
It's actually not too bad, but it's not great either. There's some costumes, like, that just don't work. Like, the traditional Captain America costume just does not work in a real-life setting. I think the ones that they kind of tooled for the MCU movies actually works, because they kind of updated to make it work and not look silly. But when you try to do the actual costume, it just looks weird. But, yeah, it is, like, the action isn't that good. Like, there's a lot of, it's just mostly boring. Even though there are moments that are hilarious, but for most part, it's a bit dull.
How does it compare to those 70s TV Captain America movies?
Oh, jeez. I've never seen those, but I've seen clips and photos, and I'm like, what the fuck is up with that costume?
I'm pretty sure the shield is, like, a piece of plastic.
Isn't it, like,
see-through plastic?
Wow.
Yeah, but he lashes onto his bike.
Yes.
That doesn't protect him in any way, shape, or form.
No. No.
It's like angled. It's like, what? What are you? You just protecting your junk at this point? Like, what are you? What are you? Like, what's your end game here? And then there's like shit blown up by him. Like, that shield is totally ineffective.
It's so dumb.
It is very much so. But what do you guys think of the original Captain America movie from 1990, which was co-produced by one of the guys who did...
Who did what?
You know, one of the... I think it was Mahayam Golan from Canon Films produced the movie. It's like one of the first films he made out when he left Canon.
Well, it's not a very good movie. I appreciate what they were trying to do, but it didn't really work. That's how I feel about it.
And what about you, Clancy?
Yeah, I remember watching it at my aunt's house, like in the early 90s, and yeah, kind of like you being in awe of it. Because, you know, you're a kid, you're like, oh man, I'm seeing superheroes on the TV. And yeah, I rewatched it like 10 years ago, and I'm like, no, can't do it. It was, it's definitely campy, it's very 90s. And yeah, like you were saying earlier, like people were just, there was like no licensing, so people were just churning out whatever the hell they could, you know, just to make a quick buck, because it's not like Marvel really gave a shit. It was more exposure for them.
Indeed. Although, what makes it interesting, though, is that Ned Beatty's in that movie, and he's probably the first actor to be in a Marvel movie and also a DC film, because he was in the first Superman film.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember if he was in Superman 2, but I know he was at least in the first one, from what I remember.
Yeah, he was in the beginning of Superman 2.
Oh, okay. So he's one of the first actors to kind of be in both, like, comic worlds.
Mm.
But outside of Captain America, I want to talk about probably my favorite non-MCU Marvel film. And to me, it's probably still my absolute favorite Marvel film. And that, of course,
it's Ghost Rider, isn't it?
Yes, it is, Marcy. It's all about Ghost Rider. Which, of course, is the greatest movie that I, Nicolas Cage, have ever been in. Because my hair is literally on fire throughout that whole movie. And of course, I would freak out and be like, "Ah!" Unfortunately, no, it's not Ghost Rider, even though it was shot in our city of Melbourne. But it also features Mephisto, or at least Mephistopheles, the other name for the character. But what my favorite all-time Marvel movie, and probably still my favorite, one overall, is, of course, Spider-Man 2.
Yeah.
Which I think is still one of the big, for me, it's like one of the best sequels ever made. Like, I think all the Tom Holland Spider-Man films have been great, and I really enjoy them, but I feel like with Spider-Man 2, that was the one where it felt like it captured everything. Like, everything that I loved about the character, and also the story, and also it was like, since it kind of got the origin story out of the way with the first one, like, it focused on more character development and things that, you know, Peter was going through as a character throughout that whole film. And also the action is bigger and better, and also, like, you've got Alfred Molina, who is just fantastic as Dr. Octopus, I should say. And to me, it's just like a pitch-perfect comic book movie and still one of my favorite ones. And also, you know, Sam Raimi directed the shit out of that movie. Particularly the scene when Doc Ock is reborn. Like, that whole sequence feels like it was out of the fucking Evil Dead franchise.
Yeah, it did.
How that all, like, all the shots and everything. So that makes me excited, because Sam Raimi is directing Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. And from what I hear, he's bringing that style back in a big way, because he's treating this as if it's Marvel's first horror movie. So I'm excited to see what he does.
I actually think, like, the sort of that kind of Doctor Strange type of, like, you know, how that goes, whatever, I don't know what I'm trying to say, but I think, like, Sam Raimi is kind of a perfect fit for that, because it is kind of kooky, and I think he's going to handle it really well. I think he's going to mix a lot of different elements in there, and I think it's going to be really fun.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And also, like, you know, there's a lot of things about this movie, though. Like, I mean, Tobey Maguire, I know there's a lot of people have mixed feelings of him as both Spider-Man and Peter Parker, but I really liked his performance here and what his character goes through, and particularly his kind of sort of relationship with Harry, James Franco, and also, like, his blossoming relationship, romance with Mary Jane. And, like, also, like, also, funnily enough, there is a Doctor Strange reference in this movie as well. Let's not forget. Because they're trying to... Because J. Jonah Jameson, again, one always played brilliantly by J.K. Simmons, mentions, like, oh, we need to come up with a name for this guy. And I think Ted Ray was like, how about Doctor Strange? He's like, that's brilliant, but that's already been taken.
No, forget also, about that.
And also, I was, like, watching the other day, like, where the pizza place where Peter Parker works is on the same street where the Sanctum, Doctor Strange's building, is. It's on the same... So the seeds are there for Sam Raimi to direct the Doctor Strange movie.
The seeds are there for Spider-Man to show up as Tobey Maguire in a Doctor Strange. I'm just saying. Hello.
Exactly.
I wonder if they'll make references to Spider-Man 2.
I hope so. I mean, they'll have to, because some of the rumors I've been hearing is that, like, other than Alfred Molina and Jamie Foxx have confirmed that apparently Tobey Maguire, Andrew Garfield, Kirsten Dunst, Emma Stone are making appearances in Spider-Man No Way Home, but they might also be in Multiverse of Madness as well. So those are just the rumors. So I'm excited, because maybe that's probably one of the reasons why Sam Raimi wanted to do Doctor Strange, is kind of close that door. Because, you know, after Spider-Man 3, after, you know, how that old film turned out, he wanted to make a Spider-Man 4 to make it bigger and better. But, of course, he kept getting hassled by the studio, and then he left. So maybe it's kind of Doctor Strange is kind of in a way. I mean, if Tobey Maguire is in Doctor Strange as well, maybe that kind of is like the kind of bring that whole thing with Spider-Man to a close and bring some closure to his franchise by going back to that sort of universe that he created with those three films. But then again, I could be completely and utterly wrong on every other level.
Probably. I'm just saying.
But hey, we know nothing at this point, so why can't we dream?
Exactly.
But what are you guys' opinions on Spider-Man 2?
It's awesome. I haven't seen it for quite a while, maybe a few years.
I think it still holds up.
But no, it does. It's still a lot of fun.
It still holds up.
It's still a lot of fun.
It holds up incredibly well.
It's still a lot of fun. It's got some great scenes, good action, good characterization. I think they did such a great job with, like, Dr. Octopus and the development of, like, Peter Parker. But yeah, I think I saw this maybe two or three times when it came out at the movies. Showed it to my niece several times. She enjoyed watching that trilogy quite a lot. But, you know, there's not a lot I can say that already hasn't been said about Spider-Man 2, because it still is, like, such a great, you know, movie and sequel.
And what about you, Clancy?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's in terms of any of, the non-Marvel movies, I mean, just kind of sequels in general, like, okay, Blade 2, awesome. Spider-Man 2, awesome.
X-Men 2.
What else? X-Men 2, thank you. Awesome. But, Spider-Man 2 just took everything with Spider-Man and just made it more wholesome. Like, they kind of made him a more emotional character, and obviously because his emotions are screwing with him, he's starting to lose grasp on him being Spider-Man. You know, he's losing grip, can't use his web shooters. But, it just kind of humanizes the character a little bit more, kind of flushes him out. But Alfred Molina as Doc Ock was probably the best casting you could ever ask for. And that train fight, midway through, that's when he finally comes back to being Spider-Man. It's like, yes, this is kick-ass. And then, of course, you've got the infamous Tobey Maguire squishy man face, like, at the end when it looks like he's, like, shit himself.
his reactions are never not funny.
Yeah. Well, there's also they kind of throw to Seabiscuit in that one.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, because when he falls down, in that alleyway, and he lands on that car and shit, and he's just like, oh, my back. He got thrown off the horse at Seabiscuit and injured his back, so, yeah, he was just kind of playing around with that.
Yeah, well, that was kind of one of the reasons why, I think, before they shot the second one, like, there was a moment where he probably wasn't able to come back, and they actually called Jake Gyllenhaal to come in and replace him, and then, of course, he got better, and he was able to do the film. So that's why I think, like, Jake Gyllenhaal being Mysterio in Spider-Man Far From Home is kind of, again, bringing that whole thing kind of closure in a way, because he finally got to be in the Spider-Man movie, even though he didn't actually end up playing the main character himself. And I like when movies kind of do that, like bring somebody who may have been in talks to be in that kind of universe, but they got cast in it in another variation of it in some way. That's why I like with Moon Knight, which I'm excited about, because both Oscar Isaac and Ethan Hawke were actually considered to play Doctor Strange in the first movie. And, of course, now they're both in the Moon Knight series as the hero and the antagonist, which I think I'm excited about.
Yeah, it's Marvel's Batman, essentially.
Yeah. I'm excited for that. And I think, with Spider-Man 2 and also X-Men 2, I know Kevin Feige says that when he started the MCU, those were the two films that he used as the template going, like, for all the Marvel films. Kind of that mixture of having fun, but also having those big character moments, emotion, and also and having story, and also just giving a lot of fun to the fans and delivering what they want. Like, making changes here and there that make sense within the films, but also still being faithful to the tone of the comics.
Oh, it very much feels like a comic book in the way that dialogue is, like, so old-school comic booky. It is like comic books come to life. And you can definitely tell if you reread older issues of Spider-Man. And as we know, because we went on Webtales, a Spider-Man podcast, we read Spider-Man, I think it was 99.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's like that.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, though.
And that's what I think you can appreciate with what Sam Raimi brought to the table.
That's also, like, when people kind of complain about the first Spider-Man film, which I do love, but some people say, oh, it's very campy and whatnot. But the thing is, Sam Raimi was definitely very influenced by the 60s and 70s comics. So that has that kind of sense with the dialogue and how scenes played out. And, of course, you know, has cheesiness and stuff like that. While, you know, the newer ones with Tom Holland, those are definitely more of the sort of the modern update of the character. But, like, yeah, I mean, Spider-Man 2, I love it. It's definitely still one of my favorite comic book movies of all time. And, you know, I mean, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse is amazing too. And it's probably a close second to it in terms of my favorite Spider-Man movie.
And, I don't know why I totally blanked on that one. I'm like, oh, man, I totally forgot about that. But, yeah, I agree. Amazing movie.
Indeed.
Can't wait for the sequel.
Exactly. Me too. But, that's my thoughts on those two movies. Now, was there any other comic book film, Marvel movies we wanted to talk about before we wrap up?
The unreleased Fantastic Four movie.
Yes.
No, I'm kidding.
Which I still have not seen, but...
Everyone needs to see it because it is so bad. But probably the most accurate Fantastic Four movie so far.
Who would have thought?
And I recommend the documentary about it as well, because it is absolutely fascinating.
Find it funny that basically the only reason that movie was so they couldn't lose the rights and they had no intentions of releasing it. And everyone involved thought, oh, this movie's going to get released. They're like, no, we're not releasing it.
Yeah, they all thought they were making the next big blockbuster movie. To their horror, no one would see it until it got bootlegged.
Exactly. Hopefully, fifth time is the charm, with John Watts, who directed all the MCU Spider-Man films, directing the MCU version of the Fantastic Four, which is coming out in a few years, so fingers crossed that they finally get a home run with that one. Because like the Punisher, they always seem to have a bit of a mixed or hard time kind of nailing the characters down. Even though they're, like, probably the easiest ones out of all.
Yeah.
Just bring back Michael Chiklis.
Yes.
See, I mean,
exactly. I mean, if they can bring J.K. Simmons back in Spider-Man Far From Home as J. Jonah Jameson, because they know they could never find anyone who could top his performance in the Raimi films, they can do it for Michael Chiklis.
Yeah, and he's James Gordon, too. So, again, another, you know, DC Marvel, you know, hopper.
Ah, that's a good point. Good point. But, yeah, I guess that could be a wrap of this episode of the Super Podcast. This was definitely a fun one, and we had a lot to talk about.
That we did.
And Lancy, where can people find you on the internet this week?
Oh, I don't want to go down that rabbit hole. where can they find me? Are you talking Instagram? Or I'm sorry, what do you mean? Yeah.
Oh yeah, you can say you can like your Instagram. Okay.
Yeah, what is my Instagram handle? I just sign in, so I don't even know what the hell it is anymore.
I don't think anyone does.
No, the clever guy.
The clever guy.
No spaces, all lowercase. Awesome. And then my Facebook, which I don't really use.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Just use Facebook to post in our group. That's it. That's all you need it for.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you can find me there, too.
But I think just keep posting pictures of snow, beer, and food.
Mm.
That I can do.
Yeah.
I'll post that in the group.
Hell yeah.
Yes.
Hells yeah. And also more geeky stuff, and also anything that's geek-related. Because I always get jealous every time you, like, post, like, pictures of, like, when you get the latest Star Wars logo.
What?
Star Wars logo. Oh, sorry, I must have cut out. when you get pictures of, like, drop pictures of when you get the latest Star Wars logo.
Oh, yeah. I'm a Lego maniac. That could be an upcoming episode.
We definitely have potential ideas. And
I got a shit ton of them, and I'm always sending you guys stuff on Instagram about all the crazy Lego builds that people do, but that's a story for another time.
Indeed. And Marcy, where can people find you on the internet this week?
Well, people can find us at supermarcy.com. They can follow me on Twitter if they so desire at twitter.com/supermarcy. They can follow the Super Network on Twitter at Super Network. I mean,
I think it's
SM_Super Network on Twitter. you can follow our Instagram, which is the.super.network. You can follow us on our freaking TikTok because we decided to be hip like the kids. And that's just at the Super Network on TikTok. And as of this writing, my reface almost has 800 views on there.
Nice.
Speed Dancing has 5 views. Sorry, Bea.
How dare they? How dare those people not watch more of me dancing? Mm. My dancing is amazing, damn it. Maybe I should just, like, for the next TikTok video, I just replicate Tobey Maguire's dancing from Spider-Man.
Yes, done. where else are we on the internet? YouTube. You can find us on YouTube at YouTube the Super Network YouTube channel or whatever it's called. I can't remember. Our Facebook, facebook.com/supernetwork. The Facebook group, when you look up Super Network group on Facebook. I can't remember where else we are, but we are literally everywhere. So...
Bede can say the
rest, because I'm brain dead right now. Yes.
Yeah. Well, if people want to find me, they can find me at my Twitter page at twitter.com/BedeJamine, or my personal writer's page at facebook.com/TerribleAussie. And, of course, you can find all my writings and reviews and columns over at the supermarcy.com. And also you can find us all of our podcasts streaming at Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, CastBox, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Podcast Addicts, Pocket Cast, Dizzer, and Listener Notes. And also people sign up to our and subscribe to our Patreon. We and are just one more subscriber away of reaching our very first goal, in which I'll do a Patreon exclusive video in which I will recite Edgar Allan Poe's The Raven while wearing my Nicolas Cage tracksuit while doing my best impersonation of Nick Cage. You've heard a bit of it on the show tonight. If you want to hear any of it, we just need one more person to be our subscriber on Patreon at patreon.com/supernetwork.
Indeed.
Indeed.
But I hope all of our listeners enjoyed this episode of the Super Podcast, and we'll be back very soon with new episodes of IDFR Podcast very soon, and we'll see you all then. See you, everybody.
Bye.
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 It's too late to fix anything now that everything has gone wrong. Thanks to Agatha, naughty Agatha.
It's been Agatha all along. And I killed Sparky too.